Welcome to the Earth First Update, bringing you all the environmental news you can use for over 20 years. I'm Uncle Dennis here in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org on Thursday, June 8th. I want to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy so you can take down the names, addresses, emails, web pages, phone numbers, whatever information you need so you can take action for the environment. Let's start with announcements. The California Native Plant Society Habitat Restoration Team is having a restoration this Saturday, June 10th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Quail Hollow Ranch County Park. One more time, it'll be a charm. After a scouting project last week by a few of us, one of our stalwart volunteers has found yet another site off the beaten path, and we got it. This Saturday, we will scout other sites and finish up at Quail Hollow for the season. See you there. How to get to Quail Hollow? Well, take Graham Hill Road north from Santa Cruz. When you come down the hill into Felton, turn right at the light and drive 2 miles up East Ziante Road. Take a left on Quail Hollow Road. A half a mile on the right is the entrance. They will meet you in the gravel parking lot on the left side of the entrance road. Once again, that's 10 a.m. this Saturday, June 10th. The California Native Plant Society Habitat Restoration Team is an all-volunteer group working to restore native habitat in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. The program provides an opportunity for people to learn about natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80. Please wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They work rain or shine. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they call it a day. Saturday should be a good one. Their tools are provided, but do bring your gloves and water. If you have require more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. Or you could email her at redwoodrn, that's REWDRN, at pacbell.net. And if you need more information, go to their website, www.cruzcnps.org. That's CRUZCNPS.org. And the California Department of Fish and Wildlife is seeking grant proposals to restore habitat impacted by cannabis cultivation. The California Department of Fish and Wildlife is now accepting proposals for habitat restoration projects within California watersheds most impacted by unregulated cannabis cultivation. Contingent on the budget, they will have funds available through their Cannabis Restoration Grant Program. The program will focus on the North Coast watersheds extending from Sonoma County to the Oregon state line, as those have been most heavily impacted by cannabis cultivation. Existing damage to our watersheds due to unregulated cannabis cultivation is at crisis levels in terms of threats to habitat for aquatic and wildlife species, said CFW Director Carlton Bonham. While many grow sites have been abandoned or shuttered, the infrastructure and ongoing damage remains. We are poised to initiate this critical and missing step in the process of decommissioning unwanted cannabis grow sites. California's fish and wildlife are severely impacted by unregulated cannabis cultivation practices, including unlawful water diversions for irrigation, conversion of lands, prohibited herbicides, rodenticides, and other environmental contaminants. The most impacted areas require immediate action. Assembly Bill 234 provides direction to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife to restore the watersheds impacted by cannabis cultivation. The fiscal year 2017-28 proposal solicitation notice, application instructions, and other information about the restoration grant program are available at www.wildlife.ca.gov. That's www.wildlife.ca.gov. When you get there, go to Conservation, Watersheds, Cannabis Restoration Grant. Proposals must be submitted online. The deadline is Friday, June 30th at 4 p.m. And activists are sitting in the way of McKinsey watershed logging in Oregon in this story from the Cascadia Forest Defenders, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Cascadia Forest Defenders has initiated a tree sit on the goose timber sale surrounding McKenzie Bridge, Oregon, to call attention to thousands of acres of public lands logging planned for the McKenzie River drainage and tens of thousands of acres of logging planned across the state. Over 18 million acres of Oregon's forest lands is federally managed by the U.S. Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management. The Goose Timber Sale Project is a 2,000-acre logging project that includes logging of nearly 1,000 acres inside an uninventoried roadless area that adjoins the Andrews Experimental Forest to the north. CFD is embarking on this campaign to end the harvest of multiple Willamette National Forest and Eugene BLM timber sales in the McKenzie River watershed. It is long past due for state and federal agencies to declare a climate emergency and implement a moratorium of logging on all public lands across Oregon and the nation, stated Shannon Wilson, a Cascadia Forest Defender since 1995. In the report, The Great American Stand, U.S. Forests and the Climate Emergency, released by the Dogwood Alliance in March of this year, states that EPA estimates that carbon emissions from logging from 26 to 2010 was equal to 584 million metric tons of carbon dioxide, an amount greater than fossil fuel emissions from the residential and commercial sectors combined. Protecting people's drinking water and preserving public lands as carbon and biological reserves is about human survival and my community's survival, said Matthew Hawks, one of the activists in opposition to the goose timber sale. In 2012, Cascadia Forest Defenders initiated a tree sale that resulted in a lawsuit that temporarily stopped the sale until Willamette National Forest completed an environmental impact statement in 2016. However, the Forest Service increased the areas to be logged. The McKenzie River is the sole drinking water supply for the city of Eugene, Oregon, according to the McKenzie Watershed Council. We aim to draw attention to the sort of public lands logging that threatens endangered species with extinction, Eugene's water supply, and the entire climate, stated Oregonian Mary Grace Hickok. Cascadia Forest Defenders say this tree sit is done as an act of solidarity with E.O. Wilson's Half Earth campaign to protect 50% of the Earth's biosphere to preserve biodiversity. The Harvard professor for over 50 years, Pulitzer Prize-winning author of 25 books, and the world's most prominent biodiversity scientist, Wilson calls for half the Earth to be protected as wildlife preserves to save 90% of the remaining species on the planet. Protecting half of Oregon and all the nation's public lands as carbon and biological reserves is the only viable avenue to address the climate emergency and extinction crisis, stated Wilson. We will continue to defend the forests until our society shifts their management of public resources to a more sustainable solution. And a blockade is occurring in California's Mattole Forest, as found on the Earth First Newswire. A little birdie delivered word that a group of forest defenders are currently occupying a road blockade in the Mattole Forest of the Lost Coast in Northern California. At least one climber is being held aloft in a platform attached to the road blockade. The purpose of such dramatic action is to protect the ancient unentered forests of the Mattole, a forest ecosystem of global significance due to it being some of the last remaining old-growth Doug Fir wilderness under the threat of logging. For decades, forest defenders of Humboldt County have protected this special place, and now events are coming to loggerheads, with the Humboldt Redwood Company this summer. The time for action is now, as activists have been run around in circles by the company for far too long. The company has admitted on several occasions the need to scale back their ambitious logging plans, as it has been pointed out old-growth areas that would violate their own policies to harvest. But the company continues to renege on any previous agreements they make, prompting forest defenders to take immediate action to defend this essential piece of wilderness. The company has already done hack and squirt in the project area, killing the hardwood tan oak and madone trees en masse with herbicides, which creates a fire danger by leaving dead standing wood. Defenders participating in the blockade have said that they are resolved to stay here as long as it takes, regardless of how long this particular blockade lasts, and that the sickening sight of forests being gutted with poisons has spurred us into action. We've drawn the line with our lives because our lives depend on the health of our forests. Our forests provide clean, cold water for fish, hold up these steep and unstable slopes, and absorb and store carbon from our atmosphere. And in Poland, activists have set up protest against logging in an ancient forest. In this story from Reuters, and written by Cockper Pemmel and Carol Whiteberg, as found on the Earth First Newswire. Dateline Balowiza, Poland. Environmental campaigners chained themselves to logging equipment in Poland's ancient Balowiza forest on Wednesday to protest against the government-backed felling of trees in the UNESCO World Heritage Site that straddles the Belarus border. Poland's conservative government says the forest, which includes tracts of Europe's last primeval woodland, is under attack from beetles and needs to be protected through increased logging. It has tripled the quota of wood to be harvested. Activists say, however, that some of the trees being cut down are in protected areas, threatening the local ecosystem, and accuse the government of sacrificing the forest for profits. Foresters have crossed a red line. They are devastating Poland's biggest national treasure for the sake of ad hoc profits. We will not be looking on passively, said Robert Siglicki from Greenpeace Poland. The European Commission, the European Union's executive arm, asked Poland in April to explain its decision and threatened legal action if it received no satisfactory reply within a month. According to Greenpeace, loggers have now moved into the oldest parts of the forest and logging has entered a decisive phase. A spokesman at the Environment Ministry said the logging in Balowiza Forest was designed to protect local species of wildlife and was in line with European Union law. Poland will reply to the Commission in accordance with any procedures and laws, the spokesman said. Environment Minister Jan Szczycki ran into conflict with Greenpeace a decade ago when he was also minister and promoted the construction of a motorway in the Rasputa Valley, a nesting location for rare birds in the northeast of Poland. Campaigners set up camp then in the valley in the middle of the freezing winter, chaining themselves to trees in what became a symbol of the reawakening of civil disobedience in Poland after the collapse of communism. The Rasputa project was eventually abandoned. And a rhino has killed a Hungarian conservationist in Rwanda. A conservationist who played a key role in reintroducing the eastern black rhino to Rwanda has been killed by one of the animals, a wildlife group says. Christian Kyungli was tracking animals in the Akagera National Park when he was killed, Africa Parks added. It did not give more details, but rhinos usually charge and kill people with their horns. Eastern black rhinos became extinct in Rwanda about a decade ago and were reintroduced in May of this year. African Parks brought 20 rhinos from South Africa to the Akagera National Park. The death of Mr. Goyongi, who was from Hungary, was very tragic and a huge loss, African Park CEO Peter Fernhead said in a statement. He was a rhino specialist with more than 5 years' experience and was instrumental in supporting efforts to reintroduce the black rhino to Rwanda, Mr. Fernhead said. In the 1970s, more than 50 black rhinos lived in the Akagera National Park, but their numbers fell as a result of wide-scale poaching. The last confirmed sightings of the species was in 2007, until African Parks reintroduced them this year in May after taking steps to improve security at the reserve. And Pima County, Tucson, will officially oppose President Donald Trump's proposed border wall. Southern Arizona leaders took a strong, mostly symbolic stance against the construction of a physical barrier along the U.S.-Mexico border, one of Donald Trump's signature proposals. It kicked off Tuesday morning with the Pima County Board of Supervisors. The Democratic majority chamber adopted a resolution opposing construction of a physical barrier along the border, the first action of its kind in Arizona. Hours later, the Tucson City Council joined the growing list of left-leaning cities and states that since Election Day have voiced opposition to the proposed wall by debating or passing measures to target the companies vying to work on the wall. There was little doubt the Progressive City Council would approve the resolution against the wall, and it did so by a unanimous vote, but the portion of the measure targeting companies involved in the construction process drew scrutiny from regional business groups. Section 4 of Tucson's resolution allows the city to divest from companies involved in the designing, building, or financing of the border wall, but it directs the city attorney to look further into how to best implement that policy. When there is irreparable harm to our environment, irreparable harm to communities by building a wall, then we have to make sure we practice what we preach and we don't divest in companies that choose to profit from the pain and suffering of human beings, said Councilwoman Regina Romero, the author of the resolution. Business groups, including Tucson Hispanic Chapter of Commerce and the Tucson Metro Chamber, expressed concern about the effect of Section 4 on local businesses who contract with the federal government. Mike Varney, CEO and president of the Tucson Metro Chamber, said the section was extreme and punitive and interfered with the ability to do business freely. No company should be forced to choose which projects to bid for based on the sentiments of its elected leaders, Varney said, drawing boos from the largely supportive crowd at the council meeting. With its passage, Tucson is one of only three other cities around the country that have approved similar measures, blacklisting companies. The other two are Oakland, California, and Berkeley, California. Notorious Congo ivory trafficker convicted and jailed. Northern Congo's infamous elephant poacher and ivory trafficker, Daring Disaka, age 39, has been convicted and sentenced to 5 years in prison. Connected to international ivory networks, Disaka's imprisonment represents another significant step forward for the Congo justice system and forest elephant conservation in Central Africa, according to Zane Labashan, the Congo representative for the nonprofit Wildlife Conservation Society based in New York. A group of investigators and legal experts who make up the Wildlife Crime Unit, employed by the Dale Ndoki National Park to follow up on wildlife crime cases, have been tracking Disaka's whereabouts since September of 2016. After a string of successful operations, the Daring Network has finally been identified and infiltrated. In January this year, the WCU informed police raid seized 70 kilograms of ivory in the northern logging town of Pakola. One member of the Daring Network was arrested at the scene. He identified Disaka as the owner of the ivory. With evidence stacking up against Disaka, the state prosecutor for the district of Shanga issued a warrant for his arrest and the manhunt began. Disaka hid from authorities, but on May 17th, WCU investigators located his hideout in the capital district of Owosu and coordinated his arrest with the local police and the Ministry of Forest Economy and Sustainable Development. 2 days later, Disaka was tried and convicted and given the maximum sentence possible for a wildlife crime in Congo, 5 years, and a major fine of $5,000 U.S. This is not Disaka's first jail sentence. As early as 2005, Disaka started hunting elephants for ivory in the northern Congo and has since built links to international ivory dealers. The investigation led to the conviction of a Chadian ivory trafficker arrested by rangers working on the periphery of the Ndabo Ndoki National Park, a buyer of Disaka's ivory. Subsequent investigations led to Disaka's arrest in 2011 and later again in 2013. Both times he served incomplete jail sentence, and upon release he quickly returned to his old habits. Launched in February of last year, the Wildlife Crime Unit operates within the periphery of the Ndabo Ndoki National Park, supporting the park ranger team in researching illegal activities. Since its inception, WCU investigations have led to 17 convictions. 9 of those convicted are serving 5-year sentences. The strong result shows the park's integrated approach of on-the-ground patrols coupled with intelligence-driven operations carried out together with conservation authorities in the park's periphery are effectively taking down the patrons of elephant poaching and dismantling the crime syndicates involved in the lucrative ivory trade, said Eric Arnham, WCS Director for the Ndabo Ndoki National Park. And Colorado groups are suing to keep the public out of Rocky Flats. Clinging to the threat of human health from radioactive and toxic contaminants at the former Rocky Flats nuclear weapons production facility, 5 Colorado groups have filed for a preliminary injunction to block federal agencies from building public trails and a visitor center at the site. The motion filed Wednesday at the U.S. District Court in Denver alleges the site's current manager, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, has failed to conduct legally required analyses of environmental risks and policy options. Secretary of the Interior Ryan Zinke and Federal Fish and Wildlife Service Acting Director James Kurth are both named as defendants in the lawsuit. If an injunction is not granted, construction is scheduled to begin soon on the site about 15 miles northwest of Denver on a windy plateau. If the planned construction were to proceed before proper environmental analyses were complete, plutonium and other hazardous substances on the site could be disturbed. People could be harmed through exposure to these contaminants, warned Leroy Moore, a consultant with the Rocky Mountain Peace and Justice Center. Moore continued, "We want to make certain that pollutants at the soil at Rocky Flats, including polonium, plutonium, beryllium, and uranium, do not contaminate members of the public who Fish and Wildlife Service unfortunately plans to invite onto the site." The lawsuit states Rocky Flats is among the nation's most polluted places. Its name is synonymous with plutonium, the laboratory-developed radioactive chemical element that was used at the facility to promote nuclear triggers for almost 40 years during the Cold War. Plutonium is extremely carcinogenic, with a half-life of around 25,000 years. During the three decades between the plant's shutdown and the present, Congress created the Rocky Flats National Wildlife Refuge out of land surrounding Rocky Flats' highly contaminated central operable unit. The Fish and Wildlife Service now wishes to open the 4,833-acre refuge to the public, with hiking, biking, and equestrian trails and a major visitor center, despite new developments and evolving evidence that the plutonium has migrated beyond the central core. Fish and Wildlife Service has been conducting private tours on the refuge for the last 2 years and wants to open it to the public in the summer of 2018. But the evidence presented in court includes surveys indicating higher than expected cancer rates among neighbors, unprecedented precipitation events in 2013 and 2015, and information discrediting assumptions made in 2006, when the last comprehensive sampling was done, concerning the inability of the plutonium to migrate beyond the central core of Rocky Flats. From the mid-1950s, Rocky Flats manufactured plutonium components for nuclear weapons. In June of 1989, the Federal Bureau of Investigation raided the site for alleged violation of environmental laws. The plant was shut down and never reopened. John Lipsky, the former FBI special agent who led the raid that shut down Rocky Flats, said in connection with the current lawsuit, "A thorough lack of environmental analysis allows expert opinions about the risks from the site to be swept under the rug." There's an upcoming logging project on the Listine Corridor in Oregon. Where is the Lostine River Canyon? The Lostine River Canyon is located in the Wallawa Mountains of northeastern Oregon. It is surrounded by the spectacular Eagle Gap Wilderness, Oregon's largest protected wilderness. The headwaters of the crystal clear Lostine River originate in Minim Lake. All these public lands are public, just like the Statue of Liberty. They belong to all Americans, not just those who live nearby. It is important to remember that this is a national forest. There is a narrow cherry stem road that punches 11 miles into the wilderness. The road provides access to trailheads, campsites, and a handful of private inholdings. The Lostine Corridor Logging Project is located in this cherry stem. The logging project is adjacent to pristine wilderness on one side and the wild and scenic Lostine River on the other. This project was billed as a public safety project. However, less than 10% of the proposed logging addresses safety issues. Improving public safety in the Lostine Corridor can be achieved without industrial-scale logging and road building. Achieving that laudable goal does not have to come at the expense of some of the region's most pristine and remaining unprotected forests, rare plants and animals, cultural sites, and other sensitive resources. The Forest Service has created a false narrative forcing local citizens to feel they must choose between their safety and protecting the very values that made them call this place home. We can improve safety without sacrificing the characteristics that make the Lostine so special and one of the most popular destinations in Oregon. And if you'd like more information, go to www.oregonwild.org. That's www.oregonwild.org. And native sage and grasses handle wildfires better, researchers say. Rangeland scientist Lisa Ellsworth of the Oregon State University has a thing for fire, especially how various ecosystems respond to wildfires that bedevil much of the rural West. Ellsworth and researcher co-author J. Boone Kaufman, a senior research professor at Oregon State University, tracked the recovery of three areas from proscribed fires in the Lava Beds National Monument in Northern California. They documented a truism. Plants native to the sagebrush steppe, such as sage and various bunch grasses, recover from fire better than invasive or intrusive species, such as cheatgrass and western juniper. Ellsworth said the study results hold some lessons for ranchers and the greater sage-grouse conservation work. Chief among them is that fire, often started by lightning, has long been a part of the cycle in the arid rangelands of the West. It is important we remember that these ecosystems have evolved with fire, she said. While some people are fearful of fire, many producers recognize that if sagebrush steppe is in good condition, maybe some fire isn't all negative, Ellsworth said. Overgrazing in some areas opened the door to non-native grasses and shrubs that burn hotter and more frequently. They really changed the story, Ellsworth said. Cheatgrass in particular favors more frequent fire. The research involved three areas. One was dominated by native perennial grasses and sagebrush, and there's historically been very little grazing there. A second site had been overgrazed and was filled with cheatgrass. The third site was covered with western juniper, a notorious water thief that crowds out sage and native grasses. After prescribed burns in the spring and fall, the site with native plants fared better. About 65% of the sagebrush survived the fall fires and 33% survived the spring fires, an importance to land managers who are timing prescribed burns. Spring burning does more harm because the plants are actively growing while fall fires burn dead material, Ellsworth said. In the site filled with cheatgrass, nearly all the sagebrush and other shrubs were killed in the prescribed burn. On the site with western juniper, less than 50% of the trees and shrubs survives. There are two takeaways from the research. There's a natural role for fire in sagebrush ecosystems, Ellsworth said, and the condition of the land before a fire is crucial in determining how it will bounce back. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can listen to a rebroadcast tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. as part of our Environment Friday programming. You could also listen to WMNB 107.1 in North Adams, Massachusetts, Fridays at 5:30 p.m., KRFP 90.3 in Moscow, Idaho, Wednesdays at 3 p.m., KOWA 106.5 in Olympia, Washington, Saturdays at 7 a.m., and WLSL 92.7 in Dade City, Florida, Sundays at noon. KHCF 89.9 in Morgan Hill and Gilroy, California, KGIG 104.9 in Modesto, California, and KPHD 93.3 in Modesto, California, and Berkeley Liberation Radio at 104.1 in Berkeley, California, also rebroadcast this show. Please go to their website for details about the day and time of broadcast. Or you could go to radioforall.net, that's radio the number for all.net, where you can listen online or download this or any previous edition of the Earth First Update. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to air the Earth First Update every week. It is free to download and broadcast. The Earth First Update is a presentation of Earth First Radio and is produced at the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening, and please tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.